If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
You're listening to the Buck Sexton Show podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Buck Sexton Show. With me now, the indefatigable, the formidable, the one and only Raheem Kassam. He is the editor-in-chief of the National Pulse and the host of the Raheem Kassam podcast, a man whose knowledge and talents spans from global affairs all the way down to the proper way to tie a Windsor knot. Mr. Raheem Kassam, good to have you on, sir.
What an introduction, and not least because, you know, from a very arcane perspective, indefatigable is how the British parliamentarian George Galloway of the far left once described Saddam Hussein, so I'm delighted.
I think the word existed and was used in many other contexts for a long time. Like, isn't there like an HMS indefatigable, or maybe it's a long one, so maybe that's a bit probably too long to paint on the side of a boat, of a battleship. But Raheem, you know, we've been doing these conversations and the audience response has been great because we're just getting really interesting people on to talk about whatever is top of mind. So one way I like to start is just to get you to tell me right now, what in the world of politics? We're going to cover a whole range of things here. What in the world of politics gets you the most fired up? Like, what are you focused on?
I don't know about focus. That's a word that escapes me. I'm kind of a scatterbrain in politics. It's like books as well. I'm reading 50 at a time, and I never finish any of them. But something that has occurred to me, you know, there are several things that have occurred to me a lot recently, especially with the Biden classified documents thing going on in the background, I still can't put my finger on who got Biden elected, right? And that bothers me as a point. Like, when you look at Trump, people say Bannon, you look at Obama, people say Jim Messner and David Plouffe and David Axelrod, Bush, Karl Rove, but there isn't one in Biden world. And that bothers me because of, you know, so many different things, so many different big question marks that were over the 2020 election in general. But for there not to be somebody out there doing TED Talks and being on the front cover of Time magazine, being called the man who got the most votes for a presidential candidate in American history is a pretty big thing that you want to claim and a big medallion that you want to wear around your neck. But nobody seems to want to claim it, and that bothers me.
Yeah, well, there's certainly something going on right now with his chief of staff is on the way out. There have just been news reports about that, that you're not going to have Ron Klain anymore because people have been, it's really, I think, an addendum in many ways to your point here, which is not only who's responsible for getting him elected, but who is the person who's really calling the shots, who's really running things, you know, behind the scenes. A lot of people had said Ron Klain, the White House chief of staff. Now, White House chief of staff, depending on who it is, I think can matter a lot or a little for an administration. Does anyone even really remember the Trump White House chiefs of staff? I don't think that, you know, no one's saying, oh my gosh, the days of Reince Priebus and the guy with the Irish name who was, you know,
John Kelly.
OMB, yeah. OMB budget guy before that. So you have Klain on the way out. This guy Zients, I'm not sure how to say his name even, who was the COVID czar that we never heard about, really. He's going to be taking over. So who actually calls the shots for Biden as he's leaving all the classified all over the place and looking like he's constantly confused?
Barack Obama and Susan Rice. I mean, that's kind of one of the least well-kept secrets here in Washington, D.C., is that most of what this regime is currently doing comes from his previous boss. That I think, you know, and Susan Rice was one of the names that was floated. Now they're saying it's going to be Jeff Zients. Jeff Zients, by the way, an important character to note, not just because of his you know, World Economic Forum billionaire credentials, but also because of, as you say, this COVID czar, who was a COVID czar, but really quietly. And you have to understand, at this point in time, in 2023, the United States is still one of the only countries in the world that doesn't allow non-citizens in if they're not vaccinated. So Zients is still doing the bidding of big COVID behind the scenes, very quietly. And the fact that he's being elevated now to this prestige position in American politics is honestly, it's like a pat on the back and a thank you for continuing to do that on behalf of, you know, big pharma, big government, whatever you want to daub the right. The apparatus at any given time.
In a rational, reasonable world, Raheem, shouldn't the guy who was the COVID czar, who said that a winter of death was coming for anybody who didn't get vaccinated, that's a quote, that you were going to overrun the hospitals if you didn't get vaccinated, these were things that he was saying in 2021 going into the winter period. You would think that he should not only be fired, but honestly shamed and removed ignominiously from the public square. And yet he's now White House Chief of Staff. It's a promotion, which I think says a lot about how the Democrat apparatus views COVID, even at this stage.
Yeah, but I'll go you one further. I mean, you know, again, as I say, this is a slap on the back for him. Well done, old boy, for doing that. But it's worse than that, right? In any rational world, you said in any rational world. Well, in any rational world, the person who put together the original COVID task force should be susceptible to class action lawsuits from all the people who lost their businesses, all the people who lost their loved ones as a result of all of that. And that person was Mike Pence. So, you know, there's blame to go around on all sides on this, especially for those who got the ball rolling at the opening days of COVID.
Let me ask you this.
And Jeff Zients, just to conclude on the Jeff Zients point, you know, this for him is very much an opportunity to take that kind of totalitarian mindset and run the Oval Office with it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's like they got their trial run of communism, and now they're saying, oh, you're ready for the big leagues of being a commie at the highest level.
Yeah.
Raheem, you mentioned the Trump, or rather Pence, the Trump administration and COVID.
Yeah.
I really want to dive into your feelings about where Trump is right now and that whole conversation. You have very interesting views on this, and I want to get into that in a second. But first, my friends, if you've ever had one of American Giant's incredibly comfortable hoodies, if you've ever tried one, touched one, put one on, you know they're the highest possible quality. I'm all about comfort, as you know, comfortable feet, comfortable clothing. Raheem might not always approve because, you know, sometimes you have to celebrate fashion over comfort, but I'm all about both. And that's what you get with American Giant. American Giant's classic full zip hoodie is phenomenal. Their newest one, the Relax Fit hoodie, is perfectly crafted for the days you get to work from home or you just want to be super comfortable. I've got my American Giant hoodie at home. Raheem, I'm going to get you hooked up with one too because they're amazing. American Giant makes everything in the USA. They obsess over every detail in the construction and assembly. And they've got more than just hoodies, by the way. Flannels, super soft and comfortable. Sweaters, joggers, tanks, sweatpants, and everyday denim. Revamp your wardrobe this year with the Relax Classic Full Zip Hoodie at American-Giant.com. Get yourself 20% off when you use my name, Buck, at checkout. So go to American-Giant.com. Use my name, Buck, as the promo code. You'll get 20% off. You're going to love this gear. It's so comfortable. Even the stylish Raheem Kassam is going to be a fan when I get him some. Now, my friend, on the Trump issue, do you think that Trump is running into a real problem here with his base, with his people, his voters, with the continued discussion of how great Operation Warp Speed is? I mean, I heard him recently say that the vaccine saved hundreds of millions of lives. I have been a huge Trump supporter. I like the guy very much personally. I think he did phenomenal things for our country as president. The vaccine did not save hundreds of millions of lives. So how do we deal with this? What's going on?
Yeah, so typically there has been one critical area where, you know, even Trump, even the most ardent Trump supporters will say, okay, he has a blind spot on that. But given that it's, you know, his only massive blind spot, we're willing to not overlook it, but at least forgive elements of it. And that was personnel, right? The personnel choices that both the Trump administration made and the Trump operation, as it has been since after its presidency, remain curious to a lot of people. And again, most people understand that when they choose somebody, when they go to bat for somebody, when they put their eggs in the basket of a presidential candidate, that they're not looking for perfection, that they're willing to say, you know, no man is perfect, no woman is perfect, no candidate will therefore be perfect. But in doing what he's been doing over the last, you know, couple of years now, as it regards the big pharma vaccines, he's opening up an unnecessary second weak spot as far as his base is concerned, and there are major complaints about it. Now, I do think, however, that a lot of people are overestimating what that impact is, and I think especially a lot of people who want other candidates to be the president, Republican president next time around, are certainly overestimating the impact of that. But you're right to say that I don't think it's doing Trump any good at all, and it is in fact putting off some of his supporters. The important part of this actually is what Ron DeSantis himself did, since I alluded to it, I'll say it, which is a course correction. And there's no reason that Donald Trump can't make a course correction on this as well. Early days of COVID, the governor of Florida was doing very similar things to a lot of the other governors, but with you know, the end of the 30 days to slow the spread, as a lot of the rest of us did, and I hold my hand up and say, myself included here, we course corrected, right? We realized what this thing was being used for. We realized that, you know, European countries may want to do this. The Chinese may certainly want to do this, but frankly, it's not the American way. And you know, RDS, to his credit, course corrected. People with any level of I might vote Trump next time around will still forgive him if he course corrects on this. And he's going to have to. We all know he's going to. We all know he's going to turn around at some point and say, look, I did what I was told was in the interest of the public. It was the time when my administration came together the best. We delivered the things that were expected to be delivered of us, even though people said we weren't able to do it. We then saw collusion even between the health industry and pharmaceutical lobby to delay the rollout of the vaccine itself. And yet I still get no credit. Well, you know, that's all well and good, but he's going to come out. He's going to have to come out. And I think he will come out at some point and say, you know what? I was tricked just like the rest of you.
Where do you come down at this point on the looming showdown that, you know, everyone is expecting, Trump and DeSantis in a primary? Now, I know Trump has announced, DeSantis has not. Who knows? I'm a big proponent of saying nobody can predict the future. And all you have to do is look back at people's predictions, and you know that nobody can predict the future. They can get it right. They can get binaries, meaning a yes or no, or, you know, A or B, right about 50% of the time, which makes sense, right? People will get it as often as they don't when they're trying to predict events, for the most part. That all said, with all that throat clearing in place, are you already determined that it's one or the other in terms of what you think is best for the Republican Party, or are you in wait and see mode?
Yeah, I feel like the Zen master. You know, it's that moment from Charlie Wilson's War. You know, the Zen master says, "We'll see, we'll see." But I, you know, the foundation is clearly obviously there. For Ron DeSantis, it's there amongst the people around him. It's there amongst the donor class that have clearly said that they're on his side. It's there in terms of a level of the grassroots support now who say they want him to run. It's visible to me that everything that you would want in place for a presidential run, Ron DeSantis seems to have in place. Whether or not that's of his doing is another concern. I'm currently reading a book by Ron DeSantis. Not many people have read it or even know that he wrote a book, but he did. This was before he was a public figure at all, really, and it was during the Obama administration, and it goes into quite a lot of detail about constitutional law, the founders, the Federalist Papers, and it's so clear that he's a genuinely, like, brilliant constitutional mind. The writing is excellent for somebody who hadn't written a book before. The framing is excellent. The points he makes throughout the book are not talking points. And I remember once interviewing him back in, I think it was 2015 or 16, and saying to him at the time, look, I hope you don't mind me saying, but I think you've got it. You know, the look, the family, the experience, the awards in the military, so on and so forth. The problem I have here is almost like Trump as well, is the people around him. I'm not sure that Ron DeSantis has a team around him that a lot of people will find palatable. He certainly doesn't have a lot of donors, big donors that a lot of people will find palatable. And so when I said in the last conversation that we were having on the last topic about what can be forgiven and what can't be, I think a lot of Republicans will err on the side, if it's between Trump and DeSantis, with better the devil you know than the devil than the devil you don't. And they'll also be asking a lot of questions about, well, you know, who is advising him on foreign policy? He's saber-rattled a lot on the Middle East and Iran and Israel and all of these things. Is he going to be another Bush? He will have as many questions to answer on those debate stages as Donald Trump will. And I think people should rejoice about that. I think the Republican base deserves a full and rough and hard and difficult primary. Because for two reasons, not just because it allows for those arguments to be had and those what might seem to be sort of niche issues to come out, but also it trains that person up, whoever, you know, becomes the nominee, it trains them up for the bigger occasions, the presidential debates, the campaign itself. And I think if Trump lacked anything last time in his campaign, it was that he didn't go through a primary, right? He didn't get to warm up before the big fight.
Yeah. And if you're a boxer, if you're in any sport, really, you don't want to go out there for the championship and not have actually done your thing for weeks or even months beforehand. So I can see, I think you're right, by the way, that it's almost a stone upon which the blade can be sharpened for any politician. But on our side, we're certainly going to need that given the media reality that we're up against. I want to ask you about the royal family, Raheem, which I will do in just a second. In case anyone couldn't figure it out from his accent, which I know many of us are jealous of because it is super fancy and adds a level of gravitas to everything that he says, Raheem is from the United Kingdom. And I have some questions about this. There's this book out. There's an obsession in the media with the author of this book. And what is this whole thing with monarchy? We're going to talk about it in a second. But, you know, there are data breaches that are happening all the time. And the big ones can be huge, like 200 million email addresses that got out there from a Twitter hack. It ends up on the dark web. And then your personal information can be used by cyber thieves. See, the cyber hackers get it. And the cyber thieves buy it, take it, find it on the dark web, pay for it in Bitcoin, whatever they do. And then they take out loans or credit cards in your name. This happens all the time. And unless you have somebody watching your back, you may not find out about it until it's too late. That's why you need LifeLock Identity Theft Protection. Because as often as your personal info gets exposed, LifeLock has a 24/7 watch on online transactions and new account openings. LifeLock detects and alerts you to potential identity threats you may not spot on your own, like loans taken out in your name. If you do become a victim of identity theft, a dedicated U.S.-based LifeLock restoration specialist will work to fix it. No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but it's easy to help protect yourself with LifeLock. I've relied on them for years, and I've actually had to work with a restoration specialist. It's really helpful when you need one. Join now. Save up to 25% off your first year with promo code BUCK. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK if you want to use the phone, or go online to LifeLock.com and use my name, promo code BUCK, for 25% off. LifeLock.com, promo code BUCK. All right, Raheem. I don't know where you are on this. You could be a big fan of the monarchy. You could be like, I just think to myself, I don't understand how anyone can see this as anything other than, I don't know. I view it as entirely ridiculous. Why do people care so much, both in the UK and here at home, about, say, the spare Prince Harry biography and the Meghan Markle back and forth, all this stuff? I look at this and I'm like, these are celebrities, basically. Like this, I might as well be watching, you know, the latest on the Kardashians, you know, who they're dating or something. I just don't care. Am I missing something? Please explain to me, because you actually come from Great Britain. Go ahead.
Well, I do. And I actually come from a historic county called Middlesex. And I just saw that your American Giant hoodies are made in Middlesex, North Carolina. So we have a link there.
Well done.
I am a monarchist. And I'm a proud one. I believe in the institution of monarchy. I believe in having a part of your government being there for the long haul and therefore having the nation's interests at heart rather than re-election or fundraising or anything like that at heart. I don't believe in a tyrannical or dictatorship. I don't believe in a vast amounts of executive authority being vested in the crown. But there is a difference. There is a difference between the crown, right, the monarchy as an institution, and the royal family. The royal family, like you say, can become very much like watching reality television, and the tabloid papers love to make it that, right? Meghan Markle is really the reason that we're having this conversation here, and I'll remind you where she comes from, and it is not the United Kingdom. So thank you for that. And of course, the last big blow up that we had, if you exclude Diana from it, in and of herself, was Wallace Simpson, another American who got embroiled in the royal family and caused the king to abdicate.
Wow. This is amazing. Raheem Kassam blaming America for the British royal family's mess ups. Look at this.
I will take responsibility for Christopher Steele if you take responsibility for Meghan Markle. That's all I'm saying, right?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. But so you think that there is a role for it?
Oh, massive. I mean, massive. You asked me what really sort of is bugging me politically at the moment and maybe even keeping me up at night a little bit. It is the incoming constitutional vandalism that we are about to see, because the Labour Party, which is our left-wing party in the United Kingdom, looks like it's going to take the reins of government next time around after there is an election. And they have promised to abolish the House of Lords. That is our upper chamber. They will replace it with an elected Senate. And my position on this is that what is the point of bicamerality, right? Two chambers in your Congress, Parliament, whatever, if they're both chosen in the same way. I think you guys had a constitutional amendment that reflected with number 17 or something like that, that changed the nature of how your Senate was chosen. And it basically ruined the Senate. The Senate was never supposed to be just another democratic body full of politicians. And they're going to do that to our House of Lords. So here's the thing. So we're going to have two democratic chambers in our parliament. The executive branch in the United Kingdom is also chosen from the parliament. And then you're basically saying there shouldn't be a monarchy either. So at that point, you've got a tyranny of the majority system. It doesn't work. There has to be something more than just politicians who push that stuff around.
Right.
And it's really interesting to me because Sir Keir Starmer, who is the leader of the Labour Party right now, who will become the prime minister if the polls remain the same, went to Davos. Went to the World Economic Forum, and he was asked by a reporter, Emily Maitlis, if you had to choose between Westminster and Davos, which would it be? And he said, Davos. Well, it's interesting, isn't it? That he is the one that's charging headfirst with constitutional vandalism, and at the same time, he thinks the unelected are the way to get things done. It doesn't hold. The argument doesn't hold. I think you do need somebody who has the long-term interest of the nation at heart.
So even if they don't have real power, right? Like it's a symbolism that's supposed to be. I don't even know what authority is still vested in the monarch.
Well, it's interesting because in my book, Enoch Was Right, I talk about this, right? In 1948, when the Canadians effectively created their own form of nationality and said, we're not subjects anymore, we have Canadian citizenship, it changed everything for the entire British Empire. And so we went from subjects to citizens within the same period of time. But what are you citizens of is the question, because of course we have England, we have Wales, we have Northern Ireland, we have Scotland. Several of those make up Great Britain. Several more of those together make up the United Kingdom. You know, we have this kind of grand union of different, countries and entities that voluntarily come together, much like your states, right? And they say, okay, we are going to vest our power in the nation. But what is the nation? Well, the nation has to be more than the sum of its politicians, right? It can't just be some text that is scribbled down because, you have a constitution, Remember, we don't have a written constitution. We have an evolving constitution, right? Our primary law is our constitution. It gets very complicated, but it's not dull. I assure you that. I know a lot of people get sort of think, oh, you know, what do I know about constitutional, you know, import and all of this stuff as it relates to politics? It's everything. If you don't understand the way your country works, then you can't really complain about how it works. And at the end of all of the questions that are raised about what makes Britain Britain is the crown, because the crown is the connection between the nation and God. That's why, as you'll see when Charles is crowned formally, that they will touch his head with anointing oil. And that
right.
is the oil
head of the Church
signifies.
Of England, right? Isn't the crown that the head of the Church of England, technically? That's how this
and
goes.
And that is what signifies right. Which that I it think, is not the man that really has the power. It is God that has the power.
I think Hitchens, who is just a poor man's Raheem Kassam, Christopher Hitchens used to say that, yes, the Church of England built on the family values of Henry VIII, which I think is pretty funny. But anyway, it was a Hitchens line. But yes, back to the crown.
I'm not sure that Christopher Hitchens can wax moral about anybody else's exploits.
Well, he's certainly not here anymore to defend himself. So there's that. but tell me this. I was actually going to ask you something kind of silly for a second, just to take us in a different direction.
Yeah.
Do you watch The Crown like ever? Because I try to fight it as long as I can. But, you know, you have a girlfriend. I have a fiance. The ladies love that show, man. I don't know. I couldn't fight it off anymore. I was like, all right, fine, honey. We'll watch The Crown. And it's pretty engrossing for what it is.
Yeah, actually, my girlfriend doesn't like The Crown. And I think... because she's just like a very red-blooded American patriot and finds it all very stuffy and boring. Yeah. and we did fight a war irrelevant.
Not that long ago, so we would pretty much never have to pay any attention to the British royal family ever again here. That is the thing. So for Americans, this is what I ask you as a Brit, why do you care? As Americans, I do not want to hear it from people. It's bizarre the fixation they have with the British royal family. It makes no sense to me at all, but for British people, I understand. So that's one error. So we've
look, I mean, the Crown is a good show. It's not particularly true to real life, but it's very entertaining. The interest in it, however, speaks to something broader, I think. And I know you're not going to like what I'm about to say, but I do think Americans kind of miss something. They miss this institution almost. I'm not saying that they want to be ruled from London, right? You maybe want your own monarchy. But
people want something that's aspirational. And in a country where we have the founding fathers being torn down all the time, and
Look, we all love, like, of course, there's British Republicans who want an end to the monarchy and so on and so forth. And that is only unfortunately going to grow and grow with Charles at the helm. Everyone basically loved Her Majesty the Queen. They understood that her life was, yes, she gets to live in nice big palaces, but they understood that her life was really service. And I was lucky enough to be able to go to Windsor Castle and pay my respects at her tomb recently. And we had, you know, as a nation, we could come together and celebrate that person doing such great things.
I just offhand referred to her as in terms of popularity, the Dolly Parton of the United Kingdom, which Clay thought was, he was like, you're crazy. You're going to get so bashed. And it turned out there was like a big Tennessee newspaper that picked that up, or, you know, that they took that line. I don't know if they heard it from me or they just went with it, but she was like the Dolly Parton of the United Kingdom. Everybody loved her, which I thought was pretty funny.
We had Vera Lynn during the Second World War. We had Vera Lynn, and Vera Lynn, people will know the song We'll Meet Again. And actually, We'll Meet Again was one of the last songs that was ever played on one of the Queen's Christmas addresses. And so that, I feel like Vera Lynn was kind of our Dolly Parton. I feel like the reason you don't have a comparison is because of the very short-term nature of both your politics and your celebrity life. And again, it's hard to explain, because I understand that constitutionally you guys are averse to it, but from an institutional perspective, a lot of Britons like myself look at it and go, I'm so comforted by that.
So this turns into the next, I think it's an easy way to transition into something that to me is related, and you can take this however you want, which is, I remember, I think it was actually Andrew Tate before he was held in prison. He has UK citizenship as well as American citizenship. I think he said that England is a country that no longer stands for anything and that won't won't defend its values and is effectively in terminal decline as a society. Do you agree with that diagnosis? And I ask because as an American, I think a lot of people look at Canada, look at the UK, look at Australia. I was living in, now I've never been there and I don't profess to be an Australia expert. I thought it was kind of like the United Kingdom with nicer people and kangaroos. But turns out they're a bunch of socialists who will do whatever they're told and embrace authoritarianism, embrace the most insane COVID lunacy. And that really worries me in a society that it can't actually be nimble and adapt to reality as it happens, that it could be overtaken by a mass hysteria. Same thing in Canada under Trudeau. Is the UK a country? And so we think that those places are just further ahead of America. You know, they're warning signs of what we will turn into if we don't stand for certain values, freedom, liberty, individuality. Is the UK in terminal decline? What do you make of that?
Serfdom. I mean, what you're talking about is serfdom, right? And it's the worst part of it is almost the choice to be a serf, to be a slave to your government, your bureaucrats, your politicians, and forget that they are the ones who are either supposed to represent your interests or as you guys once did, you know, they'll get tarred and feathered and tossed overboard. And serfdom is a very difficult thing in a world that is increasingly relativistic morally and is increasingly secularized because government has become the religion. You know, in the United Kingdom, the National Health Service, which is failing, they're having to set up temporary morgues and mortuaries across the country simply because the National Health Service is killing people. It is killing people by not showing up in time when ambulances are called. It is killing people because it is spending gargantuan sums of money. You know, the National Health Service's budget has doubled in the last, I think it's 10 to 15 years, the health has doubled. Do you think we have seen commensurate rises in care as a result of that budget doubling? No, we haven't. We've actually seen a worsening in care over the last decade in the United Kingdom. And the National Health Service, you know, they call it the envy of the world. I have never met anybody anywhere in the world who envies our healthcare system. I've never met anybody anywhere in the world who looks at my teeth and goes, wow, that's wonderful. I want to use the dentist that you're using. And you know, we've replaced God with government in our societies. We've replaced, you know, this appeal to something greater than us and greater than the little particularisms of the lives, the small little lives we lead, with bureaucracy and the boring nature of the things that they tell us are moral, which are oftentimes wildly immoral things. Right? I think of transgender, you know, library drag queen hour or whatever they're calling it nowadays is one of the great examples of what is being deified. So it's like a bathtub, right? Where we know that we have to keep that tub full of warm water that cleanses us, that nourishes us, that protects us, that keeps us warm. Meanwhile, our Davos elite are constantly pulling the plug, and we're just constantly trying to plug that hole with all manner of things. Brexit is a good example of that, right? That was the United Kingdom's electorate slamming their hand on the drain and saying, whoa, 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 we need our own, you know, system of government to keep us independent, to keep us sovereign, to keep us safe, and to hold our belief in something. Yeah. But the problem with that is, sorry, I know I'm
no, it's all right. I just want to ask you about Brexit because you were very close to it and know Nigel, and so I want to put a pin in that, but keep going.
But just in conclusion of all of that point, you know, you ask about terminal decline. It's not that we, the people of any of these Western countries, necessarily believe in the terminal decline of our nations. Yes, of course, some silly Marxists, you know, have bought into it, but we can overcome those people. We are stronger than them in very many ways. But it's that every time we get anywhere close to not just stopping that, but actually turning the taps on and refilling the bathtub, it's the you know, we call them the Davos elite today. It's Davos one day, it's Brussels another, it's Capitol Hill another. All of those people and all of those institutions are still just tugging away at that drain.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring. Laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law.
18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Now, you did have a decline. Particular... Right. You did have a particular view of Brexit, somebody who you were on Nigel Farage's staff. You know Nigel very well. You know the Brexiteers personally and in a close way. We were told, I mean, if you were somebody who was reading, you know, The Economist or the editorial page of The New York Times, that Brexit was going to lead to calamity, right? I'm not sure if it was going to be that all the Brits would be starving, but, you know, bad things were going to happen from it, and then it was madness. What has been the report card since Brexit? I mean, what has gone on? How would you view it now that some years have passed since that event that seemed to shock the international elites and create this moment of maybe we're not all going to be taking orders from bureaucrats in Brussels, actually?
Now, this is where it gets really interesting, because I talked earlier about how Keir Starmer wants to replace the House of Lords with a Senate. Well, why does he really want to do that? Because what he intends to do is pass primary legislation in the House of Commons to rejoin the European Union, and he knows it'll be easier to pass in an elected Senate to rejoin the European Union than it would pass through the House of Lords in our current constitutional format. So right now, in the British press, on an almost daily basis, and I go through it on an almost daily basis, well, no, I go through it on a daily basis, you see... You know, when are we going to rejoin the EU? Should Britain rejoin the EU? Brexit is least, you know, less popular than ever before. And as the older generation that predominantly voted for Brexit is dying out, unfortunately, and as the Conservative Party continues to govern as a centre-left party, Brexit is being watered down. It is being neutralised. There are all sorts of things that are blamed nowadays on Brexit that have nothing to do with Brexit, but the British public sort of looks at it and they're told it by the Sun newspaper and the Times newspaper and the Murdoch press and Sky News and the BBC, and they're told it and they go, oh yeah, I guess it must have been Brexit. What a bad idea. So I think, unfortunately, we're looking at a campaign now to return to the European Union within the next 5 years, and they may well win that campaign.
Is Britain salvageable as a great country with a great tradition and a great people?
Huh. Well, what you've described almost no longer exists. There is no one, you know, one British people anymore. In a lot of ways, I am evidence of that. You know, my parents were my father was born in Tanzania. My mother was born in India. My lineage goes back to India. And a lot of people who are of my ilk chose not to assimilate. And they chose not to, you know, have traditional British values. And they chose not to learn the language as fluently as I did. And they chose to kind of not have, I wouldn't say like a dual loyalty, but certainly like a dualism, right, inside themselves I don't like this. I don't like.
Well, can I just? I mean, British, so the American India. People, you know, the American people as one people exist. It's not about any racial, ethnic, or religious identity. It's about your identity as an American, bound by the Constitution and our culture, our shared
right,
history,
etc.
But
you guys do
right?
it too.
So right. So
but
so
you
does
guys
the
do it too.
Is the UK salvageable in as that, or is it breaking apart?
I'm leading up to that.
Yeah, go ahead.
I like to flesh those things out. You know, and the reason I say that is because you do it too, right? African American, Asian American, and everybody gets sort of segmented into these little identity groups, and we've done that as well. Unless there is a prime minister, a real sort of philosopher king that comes along and reminds the country that it is one country, in a very Disraelian sense, right? One nation conservatism was the longest running strain of conservative thought in the United Kingdom ever. Unless somebody comes along and reminds the general public of that and indeed forces them to believe in it, right? Like, I don't mean through, you know, coercion. I mean through argument, you know, gets them to believe in that goal, then no, there isn't a United Kingdom anymore. And nor should we pretend that there will be. You cannot have a cohesive nation if everybody is taught that they are part of a different group than their next door neighbors.
Is it more left wing as a country now in its totality than the U.S.? I mean, you have a means of comparison here. You know, one thing that I think people have recognized about Canada is if you take the most, beta male, low T Marxist leadership in America, that's actually much more common and much more powerful in the context of Canada and Trudeau and Trudeauism, right? So is that also true about the UK right now? Are they more woke? I don't even know how much that term is used over there than we are here.
Oh, it's used way too much over there. And it's used in a really cringe way. So they don't say, like, somebody goes, you know, woke in the UK. Woke is the adjective that describes the movement. So there'll be like editorials in the Telegraph that says we must end woke, you know, as if that's like Antifa. And it gets on my nerves just from a linguistic perspective. To answer your question, I think governmentally, bureaucratically, we are far more of a left-wing country, and you should look to us as a warning of how not to run your country. Culturally, you know, I've been here for 6 years now. Culturally, I think America is more left-wing. People in the United Kingdom are more, you know, more inclined to say, okay, well, let's take a beat on that and think about that and think about its implications to our culture, to our neighbors, to our society. America seems, every time somebody comes up with a progressive new thing, seems to just slam its foot on the accelerator and go, yep, that's the new thing and that's what we're going for now, whether it's BLM or what have you, or the transgender stuff. I mean, America, we have to accept this. America is the single largest exporter of cultural Marxism in the world today. And that is a deeply, deeply shocking thing. And of course, when you guys sneeze, we all catch a cold. That stuff is now in Britain. It is now in Australia. It is now in Canada. It is all across Europe. You know, the French actually have the lowest tolerance for this stuff of almost any European nation. I mean, apart from the deeply social conservative nations like Poland and Hungary, the French look at American political culture as they look at most things American, right?
I was going to say, I don't think it's just our political culture, but yeah, they look at a lot of our stuff.
But on this one, they're right. You know, on this thing, they're not just being French about it. They're actually being smart about it. And so you got to know that when the French are right about something in critique of you, you've really got a problem.
May we bien sûr. We'll come back with Raheem here in a second. I want to ask you, what's the craziest thing that's happening in America today? So you can think about that one, Raheem, while I remind everybody. By the way, do you sleep on a MyPillow?
I do.
You should be. You do? Yeah, I figured. I do too, because MyPillow is amazing. Mike Lindell has built this incredible company that helps millions of Americans get the best night's sleep they've ever had. And the Giza Dream sheets, I sleep on those every night. I love them. Raheem loves them. They're phenomenal. The Giza Dream sheets are made from the world's best cotton, Giza, ultra soft and breathable, yet extremely durable. Right now, the Giza Dream sheets are at the lowest price ever. Sheets coming in as low as $29.98 with promo code BUCK. All you have to do is go to MyPillow.com, click on the Radio Listener Special square, and you'll get Giza Dream Sheets, a whole bunch of different colors and styles. $29.98 when you use promo code BUCK. Look, MyPillow products come with a 10-year warranty, 60-day money-back guarantee. You have so much to gain here, nothing to lose, and the good night's sleep you're going to get is worth it. The sheets are so soft, they're durable, you're going to love them. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the Radio Listener Special square for the Giza Dream Sheets and a lot of other products with amazing deals when you use promo code BUCK, B-U-C-K. Craziest thing, and you can answer this however you want, Raheem. Craziest thing happening in America today.
The craziest thing happening in America today is that the right has not managed cultural hegemony yet. Like, that is, I find that utterly, utterly baffling, to be honest with you. That there is so much cultural rot and disease coming out of Hollywood and New York, as you know, but that we haven't really truly cut through that yet really embarrasses me. It speaks to our lack of creativity. It speaks to our lack of Honestly, for people who regard themselves as I do, and I don't profess to speak for you in this regard, but I regard myself as a populist. For people who regard themselves as populists, we're not very good at being popular in the things that we promote culturally. So that's why this year, I'm pleased to say, and I think you may be getting the exclusive here on this right now, that the National Pulse is going to be moving into that territory. We are going to be moving into print magazine territory. We are going to be moving into documentary territory. We are just widening the scope of the things that we present to as many people as possible, because I was reading this Michael Anton essay, actually. I think it was in IM 1776 magazine, which is a great magazine, about Tom Wolfe and about the vacuums that he saw around him culturally, and how he just chose to fill them, right? He just told the stories that he saw before him, that he knew weren't being told anywhere else, Bonfire of the Vanities, so on and so forth. And we've got real bonfires of the vanities going on in Washington, D.C. right now. We've got neighborhoods, predominantly black neighborhoods, by the way, which are being totally left to rack and ruin by a black mayor of Washington, D.C. But nobody's telling those stories for the sake of history. Nobody's telling them for the sake of the next generation learning from the mistakes. And so that is the thing that really, really baffles me constantly. How we are not better at this yet.
So, for example, because I think this comes up a lot on the right in the context of how is it that we thought the outcome here would be any different when we've been playing for this make-believe neutral space in a lot of institutions for a long time. And for example, even in classrooms, they'll say, oh, well, you're pushing your right-wing conservative values. Someone's values are going to be in the classroom. I think the right has at least woken up to that reality because of, transgender drag queen story hour and all these things that have become, and CRT, which is explicitly, in many contexts, anti-white, explicitly racist in the way that it's presented in classrooms. People have realized that there's not this, oh, we're just going to have neutral space. Neutral space. When you have a left wing that says that, algebra and higher math class being taught is racist, you have to address the battle as it is and not as you wish it were. So there are some places, colleges, universities, for example, Raheem, that the left will not allow there to be any who do not think like them. But given the creative areas, right? So, if you're in the political science department at a lot of different universities, you're never going to get hired as an associate professor. You're never going to get tenure for sure if you're conservative. So they operate it like a country club that won't allow in the undesirables, the conservatives. In the creative side, though, why don't we have, you mentioned Tom Wolfe. By the way, Bonfire of the Vanities, one of my favorite novels of all time, took place in the Upper East Side where I grew up. And I read Tom Wolfe when I was in the eighth grade. I read that book in the eighth grade. Why don't we produce great novels? Why don't we have, it's amazing. People will say that show is conservative, or people will say the Top Gun Maverick is conservative. I say, it's not conservative. It's just a movie the way movies used to be. Entertaining, good guys, bad guys, and not a lot of radical political theory thrown in there. Why aren't we capable, it seems, of doing more of that? Are we capable of doing more of that?
Yeah, and it's like every single time that a left-wing celebrity or a journalist comes out on our side just a little bit, we all go nuts and hand them the football and say, right, you're the quarterback now. Whether it's Barry Weiss or Ricky Gervais or Elon Musk or whatever, we leave the people who have been fighting on our side and we hand the ball and the control of the game over to somebody very recently on our side. And then when they turn on us, or when they express that they weren't quite signed up for the entire thing, then we go, oh my goodness, how
look,
could this
some
possibly
of us
happen?
Were warning about the Kanye situation before, right? Kanye went totally wacko.
Right. And here's a message to people who, because it's germane to your question, is not you and I. I mean, we do this on a daily basis, right? We are literally creating content every single day that millions of people see. But there's a lot more to the conservative cultural movement than the podcasters, the talking heads, political strategists, all of that. It actually really behooves the ordinary American to step into this space, because only you, who is not living in DC, who is not living in New York, who is not living in Miami, who is not living in these big cities, can talk about the experiences that you're having in your states, in your counties, in your towns, in your villages, in your, you know, I don't care whether you live in a relatively new suburban district, whether you live in the desert. If you're not putting pen to paper and memorializing the experiences that you're having, then why do you suppose that anybody will do that for you, right? And here's the thing. A lot of those people were not great writers. They were not great thinkers. But what they were able to do is observe the world around them and just write enough down so that somebody somewhere could pick over it at some point in the future and go, oh, this is what was going on in these areas. It wasn't all Biden. It wasn't all LGBT. And it wasn't all this. We need historians to be able to see that stuff. And it is completely, completely on the shoulders of ordinary Americans to make sure that that stuff stays in the historical record. The second part of this is, you talked about somebody's values is going to be in the classroom, right? And that so-called that fake neutral space. Well, that fake neutral space comes from secularism, it comes from science, and it comes from the expert class. The expert class that we all know were the people behind COVID, were the people saying that there'll be a third world war if you know Britain leaves the European Union. They were all saying that Donald Trump would you know accidentally press the nuclear button instead of the Diet Coke button. These are the people who need challenging, and we should the Chad meme where it's just you know the guy and he just says you know yes. That's it. Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, when the left accuses us of, oh, well, you just want your philosophy in the classrooms. Yes. Oh, you just want, you know, anti-abortion measures. Yes. You just don't want me, you know, a man dressed up in a skirt going into the girls' locker room. Yes. You know, those are the answers. It's yeah. You don't have to equivocate about these things. And we spend too much time equivocating. We want to be liked too much. Forget about it. We're not going to be liked by the other side. You're going to be liked by your own side. I think, personally, that I'm going to use 2023 to write more than I've ever written before because there are so many things going on out there. I am going to do a tour of the United States and document in documentary format what is going on out there in the real United States because very few people are telling the stories of ordinary Americans. And I think these are the times, especially, that those stories need to be told. And you know, history is not written by the victors. History is written by those who bother to write it. So let's write it.
Raheem Kassam, everybody. Check out the Raheem Kassam podcast and also go to the National Pulse and keep an eye out for all these projects that he's talking about. Raheem, you're promising some cool stuff. The people are going to be looking for it. So thank you, my friend, for coming thank and you. Hanging out. And we'll have to do like a podcast after dark session at some point with some booze, some lifestyle tips. What is the one thing, Raheem, that American men listening to this, if you could get them to either do more of or less of one thing, what would it be?
Well, you know, every year is dry January for me, and it's a hardship for 31 days. And I'm going through that. It's the tail end of it right now. I'm going through it. But, you know, for me, I've undertaken a lot of different things in the last couple of years. I was about 40 pounds heavier, not but 24 months ago. I've lost all that weight. I've changed a lot of things in my life. Honestly, the things that's made the world of difference to me, from a physical perspective is deadlifting, running and the Stairmaster. Quite frankly, that is sort of shed all of the weight for me. And the other part of it for me is, you know, I've very much switched. I used to be a 7, 8, 9 pints of beer a night kind of guy, you know, no dinner. It was just beer for me. And I very much switched that out, for martinis. A little bit more sophisticated, you can drink fewer of them and still, you know, have that little buzz. I actually think they are far better a measure of a man than a Coors Light as well. And then the other thing is ignore the advice from the nutrition experts who are trying to get you to eat crickets and all of that nonsense. The best breakfast you can have is steak and eggs. And frankly, the best every meal you can have is steak and eggs. So get on that trade.
Actually, totally agree. So there you go, everybody. Raheem, my friend, thanks for being with us. Thanks for giving us your time, and we'll have you back soon.
Cheers. Thank you, Puck.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.